Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Move Smartly Show and this month's live Toronto real estate market update. For those of you who are new to my updates, welcome. Just a bit about me. My name is John Basalis. I'm the president and broker at Relosophy Realty in Toronto. I started my own brokerage to put into action my belief that consumers with access to the right information and right advice will make better real estate decisions. And in leading our team of agents, I'm drawing both my experience as a practicing broker and as a housing analyst advising government organizations and other institutions. If you want to get in touch with me, you can find my contact info in the show notes, including if you're considering buying, selling, or investing in the Greater Toronto area and want to meet with me and one of my agents. And now on to today's market update. So today's live market update, as always, is a monthly session I love to do to share the latest data on the Toronto market with my own insights and on the ground realities, along with those of my agents, Gus Papayoano and Davin McMahon this week or this month, and Move Smartly mortgage expert David LaRocque. So this is a live session, of course, in which you can ask your own questions by joining the live chat here on YouTube, moderated by Move Smartly editor Ermi Desai, who will be keeping an eye on all your questions and we'll try to get to as many of them as possible. So in this month's update, I'm going to be chatting a little bit about Toronto's roller coaster 2023 housing market. So I like looking back a little bit on kind of the year that was to see what lessons we can learn. I'm going to chat a little bit about the key trends that I think are going to impact the housing market as we move into 2024. We're going to bring Gus and Davin on to chat a little bit about some of the trends that they're seeing in the market. And as always, we have mortgage expert David LaRocque, who's going to join us as well. So if we look back a year ago today or this month, you know, when we think about the predictions for Toronto's housing market, most predictions, I would say, including my own, were pretty pessimistic. I mean, we have to remember, we had come off sort of a rapid increase in interest rates. The market was quite sluggish. You know, we had a massive peak in 2022. Prices crashed in the second half of the year. And most people were expecting, you know, high rates to really weigh on the housing market and to be a very, very sluggish 2023. But that's actually not at all what happened. I mean, if we look kind of back in time, how prices evolved, you know, prices crashed in the first half of 2022. They stayed pretty flat for most of the second half of the year, kind of bottoming out around January 2023. And then they just accelerated. So, you know, prices fell from just over 1.3 in the first half of 2022. They kind of bottomed at about 1,050,000. So this is average prices in the GTA. And then the prices just accelerated in the first half of the year. We went from average prices of about 1,050,000 to 1.2. Literally in the span of 5 months, of course, looking back, it's important to think about, well, why the heck did that happen? Because no housing analyst really predicted that to happen. And I'd say there were three main things that contributed to this rapid increase in prices in the first half of 2023. And the first is the Bank of Canada signaled, at least in January, that they were done raising rates. And this really fueled a lot of optimism among buyers. Buyers started rushing into the market as they thought the bank was done. They might as well get ahead of the market before the bank starts cutting rates. And that was the sentiment at that time. The other big factor was the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank in the US. And that really pushed down five-year mortgage rates or longer-term mortgage rates. So in the first half of the year last year, you're getting mortgages with a 4 in front of it, which kind of looked not bad for some buyers. And that fueled, you know, I wouldn't say a huge increase in demand, but demand went from terrible in the first half of last half of 2022 to kind of average at the beginning of 2023. But the other thing that really contributed to the acceleration, again, unpredictable, was that sellers moved to the sidelines. New listings in the first half of 2023 were basically at historic lows, you know, 20-year lows in new listings. So average demand, you know, kind of almost record low levels of new listings really contributed to this acceleration. And the market again turned on a dime in June when the Bank of Canada hiked again. And this, of course, changed the sentiment, number one. And of course, fixed rates accelerated. So by the second half of the year, the typical fixed rate mortgage had a 6 in front of it, no longer a 4 in front of it. And of course, this weighed on affordability. So demand hit 20-year lows. Average sort of new listings volumes increased in the second half and kind of were sort of average volume. And what we found is by the end of the year, we basically kind of lost all of those gains in the first half. So average prices, you know, in the GTA at the end of the year, probably about, I think in 2022, we ended the year about 1,030,000 or something like that. And in 2023, the average price about 1,050,000 or something like that. So we're about $20,000-$30,000 over last year. So a lot of that gain was lost. But when we look at sort of sales volumes, for 2023, we're basically at the lowest level in over 20 years. So really, really sluggish market, and not surprising as the market was adjusting to 6% interest rates. I'm kind of surprised prices stayed where they were, giving that sluggish demand. And I think part of that was just sellers being pretty stubborn and sticking to their prices in the second half of the year. Now, as we look to the year ahead, I'm going to say that there's at least three things that I think are going to be quite material that are going to impact sort of the direction of the market. And the first and probably most obvious one is interest rates. And interest rates, at least fixed rates, have been trending down. We're going to chat a little bit about that with David LaRoc once he joins. But of course, the future path of interest rates is going to largely be determined by inflation. And right now, the feeling and most analysts think rates are going down, fixed rates are going to go down, the Bank of Canada rate's going to go down. And of course, this will probably stimulate a little bit more demand than we saw last year. The other important factor, and I was actually asked this, I did a BNN interview on Monday, and the host, John, mentioned to me, well, what about, you know, potential job losses in a recession? And certainly that could be have a negative impact on the market. And negative impact on both, you know, potentially increasing listings and demand pulling back. But I think the most economists right now are not expecting a deep recession. As long as we don't have a deep recession, I don't think that's probably going to have a material impact. But it's very, of course, tough to predict how things are going to unfold. But that's going to be the other thing to keep an eye on. And then the last, of course, is the listings volume. So, you know, demand might kind of return to somewhat, you know, average or slightly below average levels. But the other important consideration is going to be where are listings going? You know, and we could potentially see two different dynamics. I mean, we could see new listings for low-rise houses stay average or slightly below average, whereas condos that are dominated by investors might see an above average volume of new listings. So we could see slightly different dynamics in two different segments of the market. And my instinct is that's probably going to be the case. I think we'll probably see not a ton of listings for homes. I mean, relatively average, but we'll probably see a slightly above average volume of listings for condominiums as some investors just decide to exit the market, partly because of affordability, if they're renewing mortgages at, you know, even at 5%+ now. For some of them, the numbers don't make sense. And we've already seen this. I mean, listings are quite high for condominiums right now as some investors begin to deleverage. So that's a little bit about kind of my outlook for the year ahead and the year that passed. And I'm going to kind of bring in Davin and Gus to join me to chat a little bit about some of the trends that they're seeing on the ground, because I think the things that we see on the ground, of course, sort of lead into what we expect the market's gonna be in the future in the months ahead, because we kind of see the earliest signs, the volume of buyers coming in, the volume of sellers, what their concerns are, what their questions are, and I think those trickle into the market. So welcome, Gus and Davin.
Thank you. Hello.
Yeah. Beautiful. So maybe, Gus, I'll maybe let you start. What are some of the things kind of you've been seeing in the first, you know, just couple of weeks now, or 2-3 weeks into January, both from buyers and sellers?
Yeah. Thanks, Sean. We've seen some activity with specifically with buyers that we didn't see a lot of last year, and basically phone calls, meetings, consultations. First-time home buyers reaching out, wanting to discuss the process of buying a home. And the biggest surprise is it's the first time I've really, in a very long time, I've been in contact with probably three or four people that I've been in communication with for quite a while, but now they're ready to upsize. They want to sell their smaller home, their condo, and they want to upsize to a bigger home. And that's a big deal, because I think those buyers, those buyer sellers have kind of disappeared the last year because rates were so high. And I don't blame them. People just, they're like, why should I, sell my house and pay 6% when I'm in a 3% mortgage? I'll just stay in my smaller home until rates go down. But I don't know if this is, just a fluke with my clients, but I have been speaking with a few other agents and they're hearing from clients like that as well, it seems. Maybe Davin could shed some more light on that too.
Yeah, no, it's funny when you said that. I have the same thing. People who, wanted to, upsize, but just, we're staying put because of rates and just the idea that it's just not a great time to do so. Too much uncertainty. But now I guess I kind of just feel like it's the window is kind of open and they're just going to go ahead and do it. I mean, and they're moving for like family reasons, right? They're not trying to time, the bottom or time this, time that, what's the best rate. They're trying to find, a proper home for a growing family to live in. So, and I think they understand it's not like buying t-shirts off a shelf. They're all very mutually exclusive. So if you find the right one and it makes sense for you, for your wallet, then they're going to go ahead and do it. As far as other things on the ground, it's kind of funny. It's like there's two markets kind of going on, and they both exist inside the buyer's head and one exists inside the seller's head. I have a seller who, who is more or less convinced that we're on the way up, even so much that they're looking at like, oh, House Sigma actually ticked up my thing by, 2%, just in the last week. And I go, okay, sure. Unpack that a bit. And then there's the buyers who, they're operating from a space where, it's still time to kind of get, some deals out there, mostly in like the condo space. But oddly enough, the ones that I have earmarked to kind of like a barometer for listings for what they can buy, those are starting to get kind of snapped up every now and again. You're seeing the more sole conditional, and then you keep an eye on them. They're go firm. Prices aren't crazy at all. They're what you expect, but they are in fact selling. So it's going to be interesting how much inventory can kind of come up to compete with this, I guess, uptick of demand. I'm not going to say it's not like wild west there, but it's getting more calls, more inquiries, and things are selling, but they're not flying off shelves.
Yeah, you guys mentioned a couple of things that stood out. I mean, the slight uptick in demand. I mean, I remember I was speaking with Anastasia with clients that we have, and she was just talking about how, I mean, and for those listening who kind of don't know how the industry works, when agents book showings for properties, they typically get notified if that property receives an offer. That's kind of, and it's just automated. And she was mentioning how, homes that are condos, houses that she showed in December or late November, all of a sudden now in January, they're sitting on the market for like, 6-8 weeks, all of a sudden in January, she's getting notification, registered offer. And I think part of that is like people are just looking at the market. There's just nothing to look at. We had a client with Anastasia, who's like, they've been looking for the past, maybe 3 months, and there's just nothing to look at. There's just not a ton of listings, right? So people start chasing just even the ones that have been sitting there forever, just partly out of desperation if you need to move. And I think that's starting to happen right now.
Yeah, I think to add, like, the interesting part is, and it's happened to probably all of us over the years, where we've had a stale listing, a listing that isn't getting a lot of activity in December, and then come January, all of a sudden it starts getting offers or showings or action, and that, although that is typical, because new buyers do start. I know it's not spring, but for those listening in, January ends up being January, February, and March, even though we have winter, ends up being the spring market starts and the early birds start looking at homes and then eventually offering on homes. So we've seen, I guess my question or my thought is this uptick? I think the answer is this uptick because of that, and we're getting the conventional new buyers into the market, or is it sentiment has changed And I think it's a combination of both speaking to people. Sentiment has definitely changed. Yes, we haven't. I know rates have not gone down and they probably won't go down for a while. But it seems like everybody, those who are in a good position seem to be saying, you know, this is the top. It seems like that. I'm not calling it. I'm just saying this is what I'm hearing. and possibly things could improve where they can maybe upsize their home. So that's super interesting. And the listings that I have had up on the market are getting a considerable amount of showings since pretty much January 1st to now.
Yeah, I agree. And I do think the increase in demand's, you know, combination of sort of the seasonal effect, but also, you know, declining rates. And I'm going to chat about this with David. But, you know, as we said earlier, if you're looking at upsizing, even 4 months ago, it's a lot harder if you had to pay 6.6%. It starts becoming a lot easier if you're in the fives. I mean, still, you know, still hard to upsize, but that extra 1%, you know, makes a huge difference. And obviously qualifying and in your budget. So I think it's a combination of some of those things. I mean, as I said earlier, I don't think the market's going to be crazy this year demand wise, but it should be a little bit busier than last year. And that's, I think we're starting to kind of see that. I mean, obviously we can't compare first half of this year to first half of last year, because first half of last year is just nuts in terms of how competitive it was. But again, that was largely driven just by no inventory, right? And I do wonder if we might see that in particular for the market for houses, you know, and I kind of touched on that earlier. Are we just going to see a very tightly supplied market for low rise homes, right? And, you know, and that's something we talked about on our meeting on Tuesday. Are we going to see different dynamics for condos versus for houses where, you know, houses are cutting up, and I'm already starting to see it. Most homes that are coming on the market now have offer dates. Very few had offer dates in November and December, right? So we're seeing more homes with offer dates, more homes. You know, one of our clients went to see a home, you know, young and where was it? Like on Moore, like literally the day it got listed, they basically had a showing. Didn't have an offer date, and they basically got an offer like same day, right? And again, this is just buyers who are just waiting, rushing. So if you don't have an offer date, you're selling quickly. And if you do, you know, you're probably going to get okay price, you know, not like back in the day when places were selling for crazy prices, but you know, you'll probably get some competition.
Yeah. You've got to be an attractive product, right? Like this isn't happening to all homes, all neighborhoods.
Yeah.
I mean, the ones that are, you know, marketed well, prepared well, kept well, and you know, in neighborhoods where people want to be. Yeah. They can sell fast, but you know, it's by no means an indicator that we're going to be rocketing with, you know, 20, 30 offers and that kind of thing. So,
yeah, 100%. And you're right. It is very regional. And I think people don't understand that, like the whole how you price a home, if you list from it depends on how much inventory there is in your neighborhood. Right. And many of the homes I'm seeing with offer nights have nothing almost available in their neighborhoods. You know, it's not like they're 40 homes for sale.
I have a client looking at a specific school catchment, and there's, you know, there's probably 10 homes listed, and you know, 9 of them are really big fixer uppers.
Those aren't doing well.
No, they aren't doing well. They're taking forever. And there's one that's renovated and ready to go that we're keeping an eye on. We'll probably go see. And
yeah, so it is interesting. I mean, talking about multiple offers, we were in a situation where we didn't end up offering because he didn't want to compete. But yeah, they had 3 offers after being on the market for, I don't know, maybe 6 days, no offer date. But yeah, 3 offers, but it did sell about 3 or 4% below list. So, you know, people are kind of holding their purse strings a little bit. No one's going, you know, crazy. There might be still be that one-off person, but for the most part, it's, there's not that big fervor going on. It just seems that things are just, they're just selling a bit faster, right? You know, the demand is there, but it's not like a super hot demand.
You know, and speaking of the fixer uppers, I mean, I always tell clients they people should be more open to looking at them because they're not always all needing, you know, 400 grand. Like we had a client recently with Maria who, you know, he came to us, you know, I think in September and basically said, you know, I want to get a detached home in kind of the Oakwood and St. Clair area in the 900s. which I'm like, oh my God, like that is very hard, right? There aren't a lot. Most are bungalows. Most are really dumpy bungalows. And, you know, they were fine with that, you know, usually narrow lots, 25 feet. But they both ended up finding, you know, a detached home basically at Oakwood and St. Clair in the nines. That's like a 3-bedroom, 2-story house. You know, and it took a lot of negotiation back and forth, but they got in the nines. And yeah, it might need like $100,000 in renos. But again, you know, if they could afford it, you know, and they wanted to buy below in that price range so they can do renos, you can get decent value. I mean, that home renovated would be substantially more than, you know, the combination of their purchase price and their renovation costs. And partly, again, like no one's buying those because people just don't have the money to do renos, right? It's tough enough to just to buy a home. I mean, most people are spending their down payment on the purchase price. Awesome. Ermi, I don't know if we have any questions kind of in the chat.
Yes. Hi, John. Hi, Gus. Hi, Davin. Yes, we have a couple. I'm just going to start with a comment here from frequent joiner Dash saying a little bit about his or her buying experience. After looking for a year, losing 5 bidding wars, we finally had an accepted offer on New Year's. It was still multiple offers, but the price was reasonable given April 2023 prices. Mm-hmm. And as you were all talking about, the house we looked at didn't have an offer date, but was priced well. 3 houses sold on the street in the past 6 months and all had multiple offers. Mm-hmm. So some more, I guess, evidence of what you're seeing. So a couple of regional questions. Let's start with the proposed property tax hike in Toronto. John and the rest of you, are you hearing anything about whether this would affect what people, you know, your home search?
Not a chance. I mean, people need a house. They're not worried. I mean, the average tax increase is probably going to be $30 a month on the average priced home. So it's not going to have a huge impact. It's people don't care. Like, honestly.
One less pizza night.
I know. I don't see it, which might be a problem for some of us who love pizza, but but yeah, I don't think it's gonna have a huge impact.
All right, little food for thought. No, we can survive that probably. All right, question about Mississauga and how it's performing, its market's performing relative to other GTA cities, I guess excluding Toronto, so maybe of all the GTA suburbs.
Great question. I mean, off the top of my head, I looked at the stats, like the suburbs, the city of Toronto performed a little bit better. And I cannot say how is Mississauga performing to the other areas outside the GTA, because I don't follow those markets that closely. But, you know, the areas outside of the GTA, you know, the outer cities, you know, kind of the London, Ontario, you know, St. Catharines, Kitchener-Waterloo. Southern Ontario generally has had the most sluggish housing market in all of Canada, right? So whether they're a little bit, I suspect they're probably not doing quite as well. You know, but I think, again, part of the challenge is many of those areas probably saw more rapid increase in home prices during COVID. But again, there's going to be like minor differences. But again, it's just the Southern Ontario dynamic is really the one that's weighing down national prices. I mean, we've got kind of Southern Ontario's probably got the worst sort of most sluggish housing market, I'd say, in all of Canada. And partly it's because we saw probably the biggest boom in prices during COVID.
Yeah, I'm keeping an eye on Mississauga right now for a family. And, you know, compared to what took place last year during the, you know, the little boom, if you will, it's much, much slower. Like there is actually quite a lot to see. Just not many people are snapping it up. And I think that's because it's kind of been on this downward trend and people don't want to like hop on that downward slide. The ones that are, again, being purchased are those that are either priced very low, like a, you know, sort of a much older condo townhouse, very approachable kind of thing, or, you know, the lovely detached homes in nice school districts, which will always sell. But yeah, you're seeing, you know, good $200,000 less than what people would have had to deal with in, you know, April 2023. So it's obviously, you know, the parts of Mississauga that are fantastic to buy in, and those are the ones that are continuing to do okay.
Yeah, and that decline Davin's talking about is the decline from sort of the run up we saw just a year ago, right? So those gains were basically lost in the second half of last year, which is why some buyers are, again, starting to jump in again. Obviously, we're probably well below the peak of 2022, but we're also below even last year's spring prices. So a buyer who's been sitting on the sidelines for a bit is seeing that and like, okay, you know, let's just jump in. It is what we're seeing on the ground, at least.
Yeah, because you can see from listing histories, you know, they listed at, you know, June 2023, you know, just kind of missed the boat there. And it's just, you know, 1.5, 1.45, 1.4, 1.3, 1.25. Then finally, you know, that home might get some action.
Yeah. And I got the best stubborn seller story. So we're looking at a house yesterday with Anastasia and some clients, and it was listed for $1,080,000. And they canceled the listing. And I spoke with the broker. I said, well, you know, can our clients still see it? And he's like, yes, but just a heads up, we canceled it because we're not getting a price that meets the seller's expectations. So they were listed for $1,080,000 for 40 days. I'm like, well, what's the seller's expectations? And he said, mid 1.3s. And I'm like, so why are you on the market for $1,080,000 for a month and a half, right? I think we've talked about this on past episodes. I've been seeing this in some markets where, you know, and for those people who are new to Toronto's market, it seems odd, but of course, pricing low is common. But usually when people do that, they'll have an offer date, you know, usually a week after. And if it fails and they don't get their price, usually they'll increase their price, right? But you do see some agents who just don't increase their price and they just sit there at that low price, bringing in buyers who can't afford that home. I think it's just like a ridiculous tactic. I mean, it never really works as far as
I'm dealing with a couple of those right now.
Interesting. Any other questions around me before we kind of jump off and bring Dave on?
Quick one. I may have misspoke, John. The question I think was around Mississauga relative to the other GTA suburbs. But looking at your latest report numbers, which will be in the show notes, it looks like sales increased in the Peel region, but not as much as the other regions, one of the slower regions to show the increase in sales. Is that fair to say for the last monthly numbers?
I believe so. Yeah, exactly. Very similar. Yeah, I'm just pulling up right now. Correct. So Peel region generally, yeah, it was a little bit more, not as much growth in sales volume compared to the other regions. Toronto, Halton, Durham saw a much bigger boom. And similarly, even for condos, you know, Peel saw a decline in sales for condominiums. Toronto was flat and Durham was actually up. So a little bit slower, you know, in that area.
But across the board, looking like prices are holding, if not increasing.
Yeah, prices in general are across the board are roughly where they were last year, I'd say, give or take.
All right. And last question for all of you. You've touched a bit on it, but let's go to Chris's question about the level of pent-up demand on the buying side and when might we see greater momentum building? So you're talking to a lot of clients, maybe people who have been a little bit quieter. Do you think it's that first interest rate decrease or what do you think?
Yeah, sure. I'll jump in. It's a great question and something I've been thinking about because obviously like you have clients that want to sell and listen, I mean, I think we've all said this in the past, it's really hard to time the market, but of course you don't want to leave money on the table and you want to kind of try and figure out, should you be selling now or should you wait till the first cut? I have a couple clients right now with that exact conversation. My thoughts are buyers, we're seeing more buyers, or I'm seeing anyways, and I think the brokerage too, speaking to the other agents, I'm seeing and speaking to a couple other agents outside our brokerage the last few days, it seems like there's a lot more chatter, a lot more interest in purchasing a property this year. And you know, whether that will actually turn into transactions or it's a lot of, you know, tire kickers or people just looking, you know, showings are up, but they're not actually offering is the question. I think it really comes down to lifestyle. Everybody's a little bit different. And if you can get a mortgage now, and Dave will speak to this, at a decent rate, even before rates go down, I think a lot of people will just take that, you know, 499 or 549, whatever they can get now. And if it suits their lifestyle, make the move, because there has been a lot of pent up demand and people have been waiting for a couple of years to make this move. And so they're going to do it. Will activity on buyer side increase when the first cut hits? Yeah, 100%. I think that will. I really do. I mean, I know that's a prediction, but I think there's a 90% chance that we're going to see an uptick in buyers once they do the first and second cut. The issue, and I've told my sellers, will we also see listings go up going into better weather in April and May? And I think the answer to that is also yes. So, and again, that's a bit of a guess, but specifically in condos, a lot of assignment sales, a lot of completions on the way, inventory's higher in condos. I think we're going to see a little bit more listings on that end. And so it kind of will nullify it. John mentioned it earlier. I think freeholds will hold a little bit better than condos, and they'll probably less listings, less inventory that in that regard, if you're going to choose freeholds to condos. But that's kind of my prediction. Hope that helps.
Yeah. And I agree with Gus. Yeah. Go ahead, Davin. I don't know if you want to jump
in. I agree with, you know, Gus on the prediction of demand, but I was just going to speak to what do you do about it? If you are one of those people who has to perform both transactions, you know, if you're just a first time home buyer, you just have to worry about your first time home buying, right? If you're a seller, well, you got to worry about obviously selling your home and then buying your home. And now the question of buy first, sell first becomes quite difficult. Uh-huh. And it should be sell first, because you want to, you know, secure that money in your pocket, because it's not like 2 years ago where you put your house on the market and poof, like you're going to sell. You're not really worried about it. And if you are the one who's listing now, yes, you are among the fewer and, you know, demand is up a little bit. So you might do reasonably well. But if you do sell, now you're a buyer and you're in the same situation where there's not much to look at. So what do? Do you take the more assured thing of, you know, you sell, you have the money, okay, we can go house shopping, but the inconvenience of not finding something before you close, it's a big inconvenience? Or do you buy first and then, you know, maybe get yourself in a pretty financially precarious situation because you can't sell, or can't sell for what you needed to sell for? So I think that's gonna be something that's really tough in the next, you know, 2, 3, 4 months if listings remain, you know, low and sales remain quite low. You know, you just have to operate from a very conservative viewpoint of what the house you live in is actually worth, and just make a very good choice of what you're actually moving into. Yeah, that's just my comment on the whole
thing. That's a fantastic point. And, you know, for people who are newer to the show or haven't followed the market very much in Toronto, historically, everyone used to buy a home first and then list their current home for sale. That's what everyone's been doing for years. Largely because everything sells quickly in Toronto or the GTA usually, you know, and that was the story for much of the past 10 years. But the past year and a half or year, that hasn't been the case because the market hasn't been as strong. So Davin's point is a very good one. And I think, you know, my advice to people is I would be cautious of any agent who says, this is what you should do. This is what I always tell my clients to do, because there's no rule. Like, I think that decision is, I think the first factor is what is going on in your specific market. Like Davin said, if they have to sell in a market like Mississauga that's got a lot of listings and places are sitting on the market, it's a little bit riskier to be a seller. Whereas if you got to sell a home in an area where there aren't a lot of listings and you're very confident it's going to sell quickly, the risk is lower. And then, of course, there are the personal considerations, right? So there's no one answer. I think you have to look at the data in your market. You have to look at the owner's personal risk tolerance, all of those things to decide which approach is better.
I just to add, and one point that I made to my client, one of my clients is, I don't think that the market is going to appreciate aggressively this year. Even with rate cuts, will it get busier? Sure. But I don't think the appreciation, like if you sell a condo this month versus selling a condo in September or a freehold or any type of home for that matter, the difference in those, you know, few months, I don't think will be a huge difference. If I had to bet, I would bet that it's going to be flat across the year. So if you're trying to time the market to make an extra 50 grand on a property, I don't know if that should be the first thing you should be thinking about. You should be more thinking about, like what Davin said, you know, what's the riskier move? What can you afford? And then what you're breaking down is which neighborhood are you moving to versus which neighborhood are you selling from? And what's the differences? Yeah. Right? Uh-huh. Worry more about that stuff than timing when exactly you're going to sell or when you're going to buy, because you want to catch that. Because that difference, I don't think will be as big this year.
Yeah, because you can time it perfect and feel like a genius, but if the product you end up buying, you hate it after 2 years, yeah, you're not going to feel so smart anymore. So, I mean, you got to make sure you're making the right choice for your family, for your lifestyle, and that kind of thing as well. So, because that's the thing with homes, especially in Toronto, like they're not off the shelf kind of homes. I mean, if you're in the suburbs, yeah, they're good substitutes for many homes. But again, speaks to Gus saying you got to be pretty cognizant of where you're moving to and where you're selling in. So.
Awesome, guys. Well, thank you so much for joining us in today's live update and sharing some of the things that you guys are seeing on the ground.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, cheers. That was great.
All right. Thank you. Now I'm going to bring on Mr. LaRock, mortgage expert, frequent commentator, of course, sharing his mortgage insights, movesmartly.com. David, thank you again for joining us this month to share some of your thoughts on the latest trends, of course, in the economy, broader economy, and how that will all impact mortgage rates.
So, nice to be here, John. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, for sure. So we're going to kick off. I mean, you wrote a post with some of your predictions for the year ahead, and maybe I'll touch on a couple of them. And the first was a prediction that the Bank of Canada will substantially reduce rates in 2024. So maybe you can unpack that a little bit for us.
Sure. Well, right now, the Bank of Canada's policy rate is at 5%. And the neutral rate, which is the level for the Bank of Canada that supports full employment and an economy that has price stability, which is defined as a 2% inflation target, the neutral rate for the Bank of Canada's policy rate is about 3%. So we're at 5 because the Bank of Canada's had to cool inflation and slow demand to try to do that, to slow the economy. And at some point, when inflation is back at target and the Bank of Canada is satisfied that price stability has been restored, we need to bring that rate down. Some people think the neutral rate could be as low as 2.5. Conservatively, I like to go with the upper end, just because when you're talking about when rates are going to fall to, I think we all get really excited about what the possibilities are, but I think we should be a bit conservative. So let's assume that 3% is the level that the Bank of Canada's policy rate will eventually fall to, when it returns to a neutral position where the Bank of Canada's policy rate is not stimulating the economy, but it's not slowing the economy. It's not restricting demand and growth. So the question then is, okay, if we have to get to 3%, how fast are we going to get there? I think we're going to get there most of the way there this year, because I think the economy is slowing by more than the data currently reveal. And the reality is we're pretty much back to 2% inflation right now, John, ex shelter costs. If we don't count shelter costs, inflation is about 2.1% right now. So we're basically almost there. Now, you could say, and I wrote this in my post recently, well, you can't cherry pick the data. You can't say, well, if we don't count this piece, then we're all there. Let's just pretend we don't have to pay for shelter. But there is an argument that the waiting for shelter should be downplayed. For one thing, shelter costs are the largest single component of CPI. They account for 28% of the overall CPI basket. Mm-hmm. And shelter costs are high for two reasons right now. Number one, because mortgage rates have gone up. Well, mortgage rates have gone up because the BOC has raised its policy rate. Now, it had to do that. But the reality is, if the BOC is worried about inflation tied to mortgage rates and it cuts its rate, mortgage rates will fall. And it has the ability to solve that problem itself. So number one, it's a problem of the bank's own making. And number two, they can lower mortgage interest costs very quickly if they cut rates. So I think they should be less worried about that because they directly control that. The other thing about shelter costs that we need to factor in is the cause of so much demand in the rental market, which is causing the cost of rents to go way up. That's a structural problem. The Bank of Canada's policy rate affects the cyclical parts of the economy. When they crank rates up, demand slows, the economy slows, but that's going to affect cyclical growth. There's another a part of the economy called the structural part of the economy, and this is the part that is really beyond the purview of the Bank of Canada's monetary policy. The problem with rising rents right now is because we have way too much demand and not enough supply. That's a structural problem that's due to our immigration policy and the fact that we have too much immigration relative to the amount of houses we're creating and the houses that are available. So if the Bank of Canada is worried about the cost of rents, they can raise rates to the moon if they want, but if we still have way more people coming into the country than houses to house them, it's not going to do anything to solve the problem. So if the main components driving inflation right now are shelter costs, and if the factors are mortgage interest, which they directly control, and rising rent costs and house price appreciation, which is a byproduct of a structural problem, i.e. Too much immigration relative to the supply of housing, then really, if you're the Bank of Canada, why wait to start taking your foot off the brake if that's the only issue? Now, interestingly, if the Bank of Canada wanted to be stubborn and said, we want 2% overall inflation, and we know that shelter costs are tied to structural issues, and that when we drop rates, we'll lower mortgage interest costs, but we're going to insist that that happens. Well, the reality is, Beata Kurenci, the chief economist at TD, made a great point recently. She ran the numbers and she said, right now, shelter costs are rising at about 6%. And if we want to bring inflation all the way down to 2% and shelter costs stay where they're currently at, we have to have 0% inflation across the remainder of the entire CPI basket, which is 72% of the overall CPI basket. So if you want to create 0% inflation across the rest of the economy because shelter costs are rising by 6%, you need to hammer the economy. We need a severe economic slowdown, and we ain't seen nothing yet. Now, I think the Bank of Canada has got enough sense to not do that because they don't want to kill the patient on the operating table. But the reality is, if you don't discount what's happening in shelter costs right now, then we need 0% inflation across the rest of the economy. And that would be that would take a much more severe slowdown than we've seen. And I don't think the Bank of Canada is going to do that. So the question is, when are they going to start cutting? They think they're trying to guide us towards the second half of this year. The bond market thinks we're going to get cuts starting. The US bond market thinks the Fed will start cutting in March. Right now, the odds in Canada say April. Both the BOC and the Fed are pushing back against that notion. They want those expectations pushed farther off. They're not happy with the drop in bond yields. The bond market got all excited when all of a sudden it looked like the inflation data were softening, the economy was slowing, demand was cooling. And really what the central banks are saying now is, you guys have gone too far. You need to walk it back. But there's a tug of war, as there often is. Bond market gets it right more often typically than the BOC and the Fed. But the reality is right now, the bond market is saying Q2, the BOC and the Fed are probably would like to see us expecting rate cuts to start in Q3 or Q4. The longer it takes to start cutting, though, the more sharply I think rates will fall. And if we're already basically at 2% now minus shelter costs, and we let six more months go by, I think at that point we're going to have a real slowdown on our hands. And remember, the BOC might not stop at neutral. It might go out, it might drop down to a level where it needs to stimulate growth in the economy, because by the time it starts cutting, maybe the economy slowed by too much. And now it isn't just about neutral. It's about, we got to actually prime this pump here and get things going again.
Mm-hmm. That's super interesting. You mentioned a couple of things that were interesting. I mean, your insights on shelter inflation kind of really contributing to the high levels today is important. I shared on Twitter an interesting chart from, I think it was BMO economist Doug Porter, who basically showed this perfect almost relationship between a country's population growth rate and CPI rent inflation. And it's like almost perfect. It's like when, you know, the population kind of soars as it did recently, the CPI component of rent, which basically tries to reflect the inflationary impact on rents, also skyrockets, which was super interesting. And that sort of speaks to the structural challenges. I mean, we have a country growing by 1.2 million people, you know, 3% growth rate per year is unbelievably high. You know, historically, we've been closer to 1%, which is why rents weren't surging, you know, during those periods. So that is interesting. That is an important point. And even the shelter component, I remember back when home prices were soaring in early 2022, and everyone was wondering, well, why the heck is this not driving up the shelter component of inflation? You know, prices are surging, but, you know, of course, it's the interest component that has a much bigger impact, right? And it was kind of funny. It was like the inflation on sort of owner-occupied housing was actually plummeting in that period because rates were so low. And even though price have declined, it's obviously surging now because of the higher interest rates. So you make a good point. We'll have to see how the Bank of Canada kind of responds to these dynamics. The other prediction you had was that fixed rates would drop in 2024, but not as much as variable rates. And I'm wondering if you can kind of unpack that for us too.
Sure. Well, variable rates haven't come down and fixed rates have already dropped by a lot because the bond market is forward looking. So if you remember last summer, rates were going up every few days and everybody was piling on slowly. The higher for longer bandwagon filled up. People came around to the view that rates were going to have to stay higher for longer and that inflation was going to be stickier than they had originally expected. And during my blog post throughout that period, I was basically saying that the bond market needs to come around to the BOC and the Fed's warnings. Inflation is going to prove stickier, especially in Canada. We've got average wage growth in the 5% range, which we had pretty much all of last year. Productivity rates were falling. And at the end of the day, it seemed like the bond market needed to trim its sails and adjust its expectations. But then what happened is we started getting some soft economic data. We got into December. The BOC and the Fed stopped raising. They sounded more dovish. The pendulum swung hard the other way. If everybody was over on the left side of the boat at the end of 2023, everybody ran over to the right side of the boat. All of a sudden, bond yields fell by quite a bit. And when I wrote that post, they dropped quite dramatically. We were near the bottom, John. And as you pointed out to me in an email before our call today, or our talk today, they've gone up about 35 or 40 basis points now, Government of Canada bond yields, off of where they bottomed. And when I was writing the post and they bottomed at that level, I basically said the bond market has already priced in yields stretching into the future based on the expectation that the BOC and the Fed will cut six times this year, six quarter point cuts. So if they cut six times by a quarter point, then they're at the right level. But if there's anything less than that, then they have to go higher. And of course, if they cut by more, eventually they'll end up lower. When the bond market looks forward into the future, its yields reflect what it thinks will happen. Whereas right now, the BOC's policy rate hasn't moved and won't move until it sees inflation do what it wants to do before it starts cutting. So long story short, the bond market is forward looking. Yields have already fallen by quite a bit and fixed rates have followed. So a lot of what's expected now about rate cuts coming in the future is already in the price of fixed mortgage rates. And that means there's less downside left and there's probably a bit more upside because nothing is going to go in a straight line. There's going to be data points like the inflation data, which we just got, that show inflation isn't going to move in a straight line down. And that's why we see those yields moving up again, because the bond market was priced for almost perfection in a rate cut scenario. And any data that argues against that view is going to, the market is going to be more sensitive now to bad news. That means it has to push yields higher again. And that's why we're seeing that kind of rebound. But it's a bit of a pendulum. The market is quite skittish. Especially at turning points in the cycle, there's a lot of disparate views. And when consensus forms, it seems to swing the market pretty wildly. So long story short, if you can grab a fixed rate mortgage today, I think you're well served. And if you take a variable, I think you have to be prepared to be patient. But looking ahead over the remainder of the year, I think variable rates will be a lot lower at the end of this year relative to where they are now, and that fixed rates will be lower, but not by nearly as much, because a lot of what we see in current fixed rates is that they are already pricing in a lot of rate cuts this year by the Fed and the BOC.
Awesome. Thank you, David. So to unpack for some of our viewers, fixed rates or fixed mortgage rates Unlike the variable rate, which is driven by the Bank of Canada's policy rate, fixed rates are driven by the bond market and bond yields. And the, you know, the big benchmark, of course, for five-year fixed rate mortgages is, well, what's going on with five-year Government of Canada bond yield? So as David mentioned, you know, over the past, I don't know, maybe month and a half, they've declined. I mean, was it almost like a full percentage point or something like that?
And more,
and more than that. Yeah. And they've gone up a little bit recently, but we've seen a very big drop in fixed mortgage rates, you know, which is why I think we're also starting to see a little bit more increase in demand from buyers. Before I jump to questions, we have about 10 minutes left. I want to ask you one last quick question. Your own on the ground observations. I mean, obviously, you know, people come to you for money if they want to buy a home. So what are you seeing? Are you seeing sort of, you know, in terms of the demand on the market, buyers, investors, is it kind of busier than you expected? Is it slower than you expected as we move into this new year?
I think this is always a bit of a slow time of the year, John. This is typically January, February, usually my slowest month. I would say anecdotally, I am getting calls from people who want to get a pre-approval. They want to find out what they, people are I feel like they're loading up and they're doing it on the expectation that rates are going to keep falling, certainly variable rates, but also fixed rates. And I think they want to be ready to move in the spring, but a lot will depend on what happens with rates because ultimately, again, the market is believes we'll get about six cuts this year and they'll start in March or April. If that happens, then I think there's a lot of pent up demand that'll release into the market. And I see people getting ready now, but if there's a delay and rates don't come down as quickly, then I think things will stay slow for a while. I think, quite frankly, we're not going to see a big pickup in activity until we see a pretty material drop in rates and the Bank of Canada to start cutting. And as to when that will be, tough to say. I mean, I've been in the higher for longer camp when I was country before country was cool. I was in the higher for longer camp last year, early on when the market was pricing in cuts sometime last year. I, in my predictions post for this year, I went back and looked at the ones last year. I actually did okay last year. I pretty much got the general part right. And this year I'm just a lot less certain because we are at a turning point in the cycle. It's very hard to determine the exact timing of when things will happen. And John, I'm not sure how the Bank of Canada is going to handle this issue of shelter costs because they're not going to come down quickly.
Yeah.
And they need to go back to the market and explain why they're going to start cutting rates if inflation isn't all the way to 2%, because they pretty much said that would be the case. Now they're saying it has to be clearly within sight. Mm-hmm. But the reality is they're going to have to manage their message a little bit here to explain why they've decided it's okay to cut when we're not all the way back at two. And when shelter costs probably aren't going to go down anytime soon because we still have a supply demand imbalance in the market and it's not going to change fast. So the timing, I think, is very, I think everybody should be a bit uncertain right now. Anybody who's too confident right 100%. Now, I think you should heavily discount what they're saying.
Very true. All right, Ermi, I don't wonder if we can bring you on and maybe ask our last, any final questions we have for David.
Yes, maybe I can have everyone quick fire through so we can get a couple questions in. Gus, Davin, if you're free to join, I've got a couple of general questions too. Dave and John, actually, you spoke about the population surge impacting the rent component of the CPI. So here's a question from Oregano. Now that they're talking about lowering the numbers of students and temporary foreign workers, will we see price decreases in areas like Durham and also Southern Ontario, John, which you were talking about, London, Ontario, some of these areas in Brampton, which is in the GTA, they have seen rental prices soar as a result of some foreign student activity.
So, I mean, for those who aren't familiar, the federal government's come out now and they said they want to slow down the growth in non-permanent residents, in particular students. And I don't see much changing very much. Even if there is a change, it's not going to be very dramatic. These are long-term, slow changes. You know, they're not going to slash the number of international students by 50%. because that would obviously have a massive impact on the finances of schools. So any changes, I suspect, are going to be very, very gradual and probably not going to lead to, or those changes alone are not going to lead to price declines or a collapsing market. The reality is we still have a massive housing shortage.
All right. So you were lonely out there first noticing this population surge, though some politicians, Mark Miller, our immigration minister in Ottawa, seems to be, you know, saying stronger statements. You still doubt that that's actually going to result in any quick
I'm not convinced. I mean, 2 months ago, he was calling international students lucrative assets and cheap labor willing to pay our high tuition fees. I'm not convinced that they want to make any massive changes. I mean, part of this, I think, is politically it's become a touchy issue. But again, any changes, I think, are going to be very, very gradual. I can't imagine massive changes.
All right. To Dave, quickly, if someone's to lock in a fixed rate today, what term do you recommend? Shorter one, I would assume?
Yeah, I mean, look, my opinion, $2 will get you a hot cup of coffee, but I follow this stuff daily and people ask me that question all the time. My advice right now is a 3-year fixed rate. I think anything longer than that, rates have spiked to their highest level in 4 decades. And I think if you lock in a 5-year fixed rate, you're really running the risk that in the back half of your term, you're going to end up wishing that you were up for renewal sooner, because that's a lot of time for rates to drop. If you go shorter term, like 1 or 2 year, you pay a much bigger premium than you do for a 3-year fixed. To me, if you want to go shorter term, go variable, because the rates you're going to pay for a variable are similar to what you pay for a 1 or a 2 year. But when the variable falls, you benefit immediately. And if you take a 1 or a 2 year fix, you got to wait till your renewal date. So if you want to be conservative, I think a 3-year fixed rate is kind of that middle of the fairway pick now. You might end up in a situation where rates fall before the end of your term, but you won't have a lot of time left before you're up for renewal. And at the end of the day, if you're conservative and you're going fixed, you're not trying to hit the bullseye. You're saying, I don't want to lose sleep at night, and ultimately, I don't want to get hosed by making a really bad decision. And to me, that safe middle of the fairway pick now is a 3-year fixed rate.
Great. And maybe we can end with a discussion of the condo market from Ode Blake. A couple questions. When do you see condo prices and demand strengthening again in Toronto? I think, Gus, you were talking about, well, there's a lot of assignment listings and other things happening on that front. So that's an interesting question. Do we have a lot of listings, or do we expect a lot more listings? And Obik also asked about the cash for keys situation happening in a lot of media reports and whether it will subside in the future or worsen. So I don't know, John, if you want to explain what that is, and maybe have Davin and Gus chime in on how people are dealing with this situation in the condo rental market.
So why don't we chat a little bit about when demand will strengthen first? What are you guys thinking in terms of demand for condos? Because I think it's going to be probably sluggish.
I mean, the investors have propped up the condo market for so long.
Yeah.
So once it starts making financial sense for investors to buy condos and rent them at these higher rates and higher prices, the demand won't be stronger. And I think it's important to also note that we have a lot of construction in the pipeline that was bought at pretty high prices in 2020, 2021, 2022. So come, next year to the next 3 years, those are going to be closing. And they're going to be closing at probably maybe prices that are lower, considerably lower than what they were bought for. And those people are going to want to offload those condos, I would imagine. Unless rents have skyrocketed yet again, but I don't think so. There's a ceiling on rents at some point. I think you're going to see the prices with demand be sluggish for, I don't know when, quite some time.
I think for sure this year, we're not going to see any increases. We won't see, I'm not saying there's not going to be buyer demand for condos. There will be. People need a place to live. And with houses being so expensive, I've seen it. Lots of people looking for 2-bedroom condos. But there's a lot of the pipeline that's going to be completed. There's a ton of assignment sales. I encourage anybody to search Facebook groups, assignment sales, and join them if you can. And, there's some pretty scary snapshots out there of like, they have titles like fire sale and selling below what we bought it for. I don't do pre-construction condos. I know a lot of agents that don't, yet every one of us has 2 or 3 or 4 pocket assignment sales from clients that have reached out that say, hey, can you help me sell my assignment sale? So that points to more inventory. And although demand will be not bad this year, better than last, I don't think it's going to be so high that the condo market's going to heat up. I don't know. At least I don't see anything happening until at least next spring, at the earliest, if it starts to heat up again.
And to just briefly unpack Gus's comment about these assignment sales, I mean, for those who don't follow the market closely, the reason this is happening is that an assignment is when you bought a property pre-construction, you don't own it yet, but you want to flip the contract. You don't even want to take ownership, or you can't take ownership. And a lot of people are trying to assign for one of two reasons. Either A, because the property isn't worth what they paid for it and they can't get a mortgage for that reason, or it is worth what they pay for it, but they still can't get a mortgage because they weren't planning on paying whatever it is, 5-6%. And they never had the capacity in some places to take possession of them. They always just expected to flip it for a profit. So these are the investors who are not the savvy investors. I mean, most good investors I find have the capital, prepared to close, even if it's not worth it to pay for it, they're going ahead. But some who just, saw it as a speculative asset, they buy it, I flip it in 3 years, I make an easy 200 grand. They're having a very, very hard time right now.
I think a lot of the assignments now, the fire sales that Gus is talking about, a lot of those are like, townhomes, detached homes, that kind of thing. Cause they were purchased more recently, right?
Yes.
The condos closing now were purchased back in 2019.
Yeah.
And prices are, fine in regards to, compared to that, just the rates are not nearly as favorable. So
probably easier to
point out that. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, Devin. It's easier to probably get a mortgage on a $500,000 micro condo and eventually sell it. And even if you lose money, those can move a little quicker, more people can afford them, et cetera. But those two or three bedroom larger 1.2, 1.4 million. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen with those.
Yeah, for sure.
If you bought 2 years ago, a detached home in Scugog.
Oh gosh, I know those people are having a very hard time who bought on those very, very far outskirts for like $2 million pre-con homes that are only worth like $1.5 million today.
Yeah.
Having a very hard time. Should we wrap up quickly on the question about cash or keys? So I'll just describe it briefly for those who are not familiar with it. And Gus, we can get your and Davin feedback. But generally, if we have a client who is an investor, okay, and they have to sell their investment property and it is tenanted, okay? Anyone who wants to buy that property, I mean, if you're an investor and you're buying it, you have to inherit that tenant. You cannot kick them out. If you want to move into that unit, you have to give the tenant notice to vacate the unit. In theory, you can move in. Some tenants don't move out. They're just, they just basically say, forget it, I'm squatting. And this was never the case before COVID, my experience is. This has been a trend since COVID started, where tenants just feel empowered that they don't have to move out. So as a landlord, it's sometimes easier to sell a unit vacant. And the only way you can basically kick your tenant out to vacate the unit is to basically cut them a check and say, listen, I'll give you X month's rent if you just move out and find something else. And that's why they call it cash for keys. So the landlord basically gives the tenant whatever it is, 2-3 months rent, and the tenant moves out voluntarily. I have a great story for that, but I cannot share it yet. I need the property to close first, but it is a great one. So I'm going to leave my personal comment. I mean, I'm going to probably chat about that in another episode, but I don't know if you guys had anything to share. I mean, it's a very common thing we do. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes the tenants are cooperative, sometimes they're not.
Go ahead, Devin.
No, you go.
No, my comment is, it is happening a lot more often since COVID. I haven't heard of it a lot, although it comes up. Where before it would never come up, now it comes up, 5% of the time. I've had to put percentages on it. It's not something like, for those listening in that don't follow aren't in the industry, this isn't like, you know, 30, a third of tenants are doing this, or this is a, that kind of problem, but it's still something that's notable. Yeah.
Most people want to be fair and nice and kind and civil. So
I was selling a property in the South Kingsway area, and it was a duplex. It was tenanted. And I'll never forget when I went to go meet the tenants to tour the home, the one tenant actually said to me, I don't care what you have planned. I don't care if someone wants to buy it and move in. We're not going anywhere. And we're going to tell the buyers that who are viewing it, like very, like, you know, kind of very confrontational. So, of course, I had to negotiate between the landlord and the tenant a cash for keys deal that was, you know, and the tenants were, the landlords were not happy about it because they felt they were being held hostage, you know, and you have to find a bit of a middle ground between the two. But those are, I mean, I don't know. I always enjoy those. I love these difficult negotiations when people are like butting heads and they don't want to talk and you have to be the middle person. Those are actually my favorite personally. It's kind of interesting, but anyhow, we'll leave it at that, Ermi. Thank you, Gus, Davin, for joining, chat about on the ground insights into the market. David, as always, with your mortgage takes, and Ermi for moderating our chat this month. So thank you again, everyone, for joining us. We will see you again next month with our live market update. Thanks again.